it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to a bonus edition of Zero Ducks Given. Bonus because I could be bothered to get out of bed and go and talk to four of the most amazing cricketers who have graced our shores for the last 100 years. The four Antiguan Knights: Richie Richardson, Viv Richards, Andy Roberts, Anderson Roberts, which is his actual name, and of course Curtly Ambrose. And I started off by talking to Sir Anderson and Sir Richie.
I am extremely honoured to be next to two of the Antiguan Knights. There are four Antiguan Knights in town because the Antigua and Barbuda Tourist Board are letting us all know what a fantastic island that is in advance of the T20 World Cup, where England will be playing some games. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined by a man who played in the very first Test match I watched live at the Oval in 1976, Andy Roberts.
Yes, that was a very good Test match. And that's when I saw someone groveling on the ground.
Tony Gregg. Tony Gregg is what Sir Andy is referring to.
I didn't call any name. Let the good gentleman rest in peace.
Oh, dear.
We also saw Sir Viv get 291 in that game. So there's a lot of Antiguan input in that. And I'm also alongside the former captain of the West Indies, who took over in 1991, Sir Richie Richardson.
1991. Good evening, and how are you doing? Nice to be here at Lord's. Again, it's looking beautiful out there. Quite overcast, though, not quite like Antigua, where the sun is shining, but yes, nice to be back here.
Yeah, it's absolutely miserable in England, and it has been for months. But you guys are here for all sorts of reasons, but let's kick off with Antigua, the island. I mean, it's quite a remarkable fact that we've got four knights of the realm. Two have just walked into the room as well, looking incredibly dapper. How has this happened? Like, Antigua is an island of, what, 90,000 people? Is that about right?
Yeah, between 90 and 100,000 people. And yeah, we're a small island, but it's all happening there. We love cricket. We love to entertain. We love to have people come to our shores. We have a lot to offer. Beautiful climate throughout the year. Beautiful beaches, wonderful food, music, plenty of drinks, rum, nice rum. So we're very excited about hosting several matches during the ICC T20 World Cup 2024. It's going to be a hit. The people who come to Antigua guaranteed to have a wonderful time. I'm sure the cricket is going to be good as well. So, yeah, it's going to be good for the island. It's going to be good for our economy. There's a massive buzz already there. We just had the trophy being moving around Antigua and Barbuda, and it was a massive hit. The people are excited. So, yes, we are looking forward to having the World Cup in the Caribbean and, of course, having a few matches in Antigua and Barbuda.
There's quite a few games in the Super 8s. And, Andy, you've got a long and storied history in Antiguan cricket, but not least because you're responsible for the pitches on which Brian Charles Lara scored so many runs that he destroyed a lot of English hearts for really a huge number of hours, thanks in part to you.
Why?
I say, look, you made the pitch, but England made the toothless bowlers. I know that's fair.
You know, England came there in 94. Yeah, we didn't make pitch for batsmen. One pitch in particular, we could not allow England to beat West Indies 4-5-0. So we rolled the hell out of that pitch so that so that all the English bowlers, had to struggle. But the West Indian bowlers struggled also. But we've had good pitches against England in Antigua. I think Viv could remember in 1970 or 86, when we played there. I think 86 we beat them 5-0, the series there. We beat England 5-0. Yeah, we had good pitches in Antigua then. But I think that Brian Lara was a gifted player, no doubt about it. And people forget that Chander Paul made 100. I I think Robin Smith made a big 100 also too. So batsmen scored runs. And the reason why so much runs scored in Antigua is because the bounce was true and the ball came onto the bat. It wasn't so much of a slower pitch. It was even. The bounce was true. And Brian doesn't like anything above his shoulders. So.
Okay. Back to the moment, Sir Richie. But Andy, you were the first Antiguan to play Test cricket for the West Indies. Was there quite a hullabaloo in the island when you got selected?
No, a lot of people didn't know until the morning of the match, because I only knew about two nights before going to Barbados. Because it was a sort of a hush-hush thing. They came and got me two nights before the match. I had to fly back to Barbados because I was in Barbados. A lot of people didn't know.
That seems extraordinary, because within about 10 years, there are debuts now for you and Sir Viv, who's here, Sir Richie and Sir Kirtley. So the whole scene of cricket in Antigua must have like exploded in that era, did it?
You know, not surprising, because during that time was when West Indies was at its glory days, when all the influx. So, you know, it started a revolution in cricket, and they followed. Then I think it was Eldeen Baptiste, then Richie Richardson, then Winston Benjamin, and it keeps going.
So, Richie, were you, like, obviously looking up to these guys? Because Sir Andy and Sir Viv, they're playing that really crucial 75-6 series against Australia, and then they come to England, and we've mentioned Tony Greig and grovelling at the Oval. And from that point on, basically for 19 years, apart from that one series, is it, in like 1980, which we don't want to talk about. Was that New Zealand? Yeah, we'll ignore that. Probably Fred Goodall, wasn't it? You guys are all dominant. You are triumphant wherever you go. And I guess you came in towards the latter half of that. So you'd have been watching these guys when you were growing up?
Yes. Sir Andy and Sir Viv were inspiration for us, really. As I mentioned before, cricket is embedded in our genes. And when you speak to a lot of people way back, you would hear them talk about a lot of names. And they can tell you as well some, you know, who if they're given the opportunity, probably would have played for West Indies. But back in the day, because of insularity, they overlooked players from the small islands. So when Sir Andy and Sir Viv made it, you know, persons like myself, cricketers like myself, said, look, well, it's an opportunity. So we started working harder, digging deeper, and looking for the opportunity. And when the opportunity came, you know, we held on to it, and we just ran. And, of course, when we joined the team, it was like entering into a heaven of stars. You know, all these great names, Clive Lloyd, captain, Vivian Richards, you know, Andy Roberts, Malcolm Marshall, Joel Garner, Geoffrey Dujon, Michael Holing. You know, all these great names were there. So it was kind of nerve-wracking to be around these guys who you look up to, and you never, even though you wanted to play for the West Indies, you never thought it would have happened. But I quickly got my feet on the ground and told myself, look, if I want to be here, I have to try and live up to the expectation that and the standards that these guys have set. And of course, I played under Sir Viv when Clive Lloyd left, and we continued to do well. Then I took over from Sir Viv, and by the time we started getting weaker, and then people started playing better and learning a lot of things about us, and our success was not as it was when Sir Viv and Clive were captain, but we still continued to do pretty well. But I enjoyed my time as captain. I enjoyed playing for the West Indies. I enjoyed playing under Clive Lloyd, Sir Clive, and Sir Viv. It was great. It was a great machine that we had, highly professional. And I've never, ever come across a group of individuals that was more professional, especially on the field of play. You know, we would have a bit of fun off the field, but when it comes to cricket, it was serious business. You know, we would have long meetings before the matches, during the matches. And back in the day, it was just mainly test matches and some ODI matches. So we focus on, we didn't have the technology that they have today. So we would have meetings discussing every single player, plan A, plan B. And everybody had to make a contribution. So it was really good. So when we went out there, it was like we are ready and ready for the opposition.
And did the fact that, you know, you had some Antiguan friends in that team make a difference? I read somewhere that on your first tour in India, I don't know how true this is, but in your first tour in India, Sir Andy bowled at you quite a lot in the Nets, I guess having like a countryman there would have been just a sort of like a helpful way to get in.
It happens. And naturally, you know, if you're from the same country, you know, you tend to gravitate to each other. It happens with all islands. You know, Trinidadians tend to, but still we find time to gel as a team, and we had to. And we created tremendous camaraderie amongst all players. And sometimes, somebody from Trinidad might be my favorite, you know, and we get on really, really well. And back in the day, we used to room as well, so you get a chance to interact with different players. Yeah, but of course, yes, Andy looked out for me. So Viv looked out for me. Eldin Baptiste was there, and we grew up together playing together. He looked out for me as well, and we looked after each other. So it was really good. I think what happened back then, we didn't have a coach, so Clive Lloyd used to organize everything. So I was a youngster, and I wasn't really playing in the test team. So of course, the frontline batters are the batters who are gonna playing the match with bat first. And by the time it comes down to me, most bowlers are tired. And back in the day, we didn't have net bowlers like they have today. So the bowlers who bowled in the matches were the ones who were bowling. By the time it comes down to me, they were tired. So I probably did not get as much as I would like, but I don't think it was by design. It's just what the situation was.
Now, I need to talk a little more about Antigua before I let you go. I'm very aware of the fact that the West Indies is an accumulation of lots of different nations. What is it that characterizes Antiguans? What is it that is them, an Antiguan, as opposed to, say, a Barbadian or a Jamaican?
You know, Antiguans look after Antiguans. And there's a thing in Antigua that once you're from a village and you have friends in the village, someone from the other village will now come and try to outdo you. Farewell and all. I'm going to look after Richie more than I'm going to look after Hamish. I'm just calling a name because Richie's from Five Island, Hamish is from Earlins, and I am from Earlins. Viv is from St. John's, so somebody from St. John's is going to look after him. And it's the same thing happening in the West Indies team, is that when you're not playing, you have other players there who look after you. And that's what happened with Richie. I didn't want to see a countryman struggle for form and I can help him. And the senior players in the great West Indies team used to look after one another because we were a family at the time.
Now, I'm probably going to Antigua for the World Cup. What's your advice? What have I got to go and see in Antigua?
Well, there's so much to offer. I mean, we have some beautiful beaches you can go and chill out on any one of our 365 beaches and drink some good rum. You know, we have one of the best rums in the world, English Harbour Rum, you know, and we have some good beers as well with Adelaide Beer. So come chill out on the beach. We have good food, good seafood, good lobster, good snappers, you know. Our people are very accommodating. People love to host tourists and people, and especially if you come for the cricket, they're going to give you a good time. And then hope that you lose. You know, so.
there's actually a pretty good chance of it. Yeah.
So, no, it's going to be exciting. As I said, people are looking forward to the World Cup and looking forward to having a good time. The fans in Antigua are ready and can't wait. And it's also going to be of tremendous benefit to our economy.
I really can't wait. Thank you both so much for giving us some time on Zero Ducks. And honestly, it's a great honour to speak to both of you, but I was 7 years old when I was at my first game of cricket and you were bowling lightning fast, and a man in the corner over there scored 291. And
the one who made Tony Greig go down on his knees, you know.
Well, Tony Greig kind of made himself do that by saying a stupid thing in the first place, but yeah. Thank you so much. Cheers. Well, that was fun, but it was going to get potentially even more fun because Sal had thrust in front of me Curtly Ambrose and Viv Richards. It doesn't get much better than this. So we've just spoken to Sir Andy and Sir Richie, and now we have Sir Curtly and Sir Viv. And I've got to ask you, I've got to start with you, Sir Viv. You played a lot of cricket in England, both for Somerset and for the West Indies. What is your standout moment?
Winning the first cup for Somerset after we're performing for 107 years and never won anything. Yep. So that to me would be at the top of the tree in terms of my achievements here in county cricket and the club's achievement also. 107 years, never won anything. So you can imagine that. It took Beefy Botham, he and both Gerald Garner, who were part of that team then. So that was our first trophy.
Well, did you do that against Surrey?
That was against Surrey.
Yeah, that's my team.
I think that was against Surrey. No, it was against North Ants.
And then the next
year. North Ants, and then I think we were beaten the very first year we went to the final by Sussex. That's your team. You, Imran Khan was all part of that. Garth LaRue was all part of that team.
I've got Sir Curly next to me as well, and we've commentated together on the World Cup. And can I just say, the watching you commentate when the West Indies are going through a bad trot, you were very expressive in letting... I mean, you don't do it on air. You did it off air, but I could tell you were disappointed by the performance that day.
Well, of course. You know, as a West Indian myself, you know, it doesn't matter what's going on. I've always going to support the West Indies. I want him to win. I want him to do well. Yes, you know, I was upset, but certain things I can't say in commentary, you know, so I got to say it off air. You know, but I'm still going to support the guys and hope they can do well.
Now, you've had some amazing times here in England. Stephen Finn, who is one of the guys we do the podcast with, he says that he really enjoys watching you taking 7-7-4, isn't it, at Perth? He watches that a lot. But what's your best memories of England? Because you won plenty of games in England as well.
Yeah, I was fortunate to have won a few games. You know, I have my moments. But, you know, playing against England, you know, it's always something a little bit different. You know, because growing up as a young man, I kept hearing that the English, you know, who invented cricket and all that stuff. And so we as West Indies, I want to show them that you may have invented it, but we rule it, you know. So nothing personal, but, you know, we just like to win. And sometimes when it's playing to win, guys get a little touched up and roughed up in the process, but nothing personal.
So, Viv, you were there right from the very start. And I mentioned earlier the 1975 Six series in Australia. That seemed to be the springboard for the template for the West Indies. So they go in with four fast bowlers, forget the spinners. It transformed West Indian cricket. And when you came to England in 1976, that felt like the jumping off point. And you had, like, the summer of your life, you know, over 800 runs, a couple of double hundreds. That must have been, you must have been on top of the world then, yeah?
For sure, because after we would have been to Australia, we felt that we were hardened then. We became a hardened team because I've always felt any team that goes to Australia and you lose that badly, and whenever you're on a losing streak, certainly there are going to be opportunities for you to become better. And what I think was so important about that series in Australia, after we were beaten 5-1, we went home to play against India. And that was just perfect in a big way, because after we would have learnt what we learnt in Australia, then we gave it to the Indians. I think we won 3-0. And then after England, we came to England. And that was the 1976 series. And I think you just mentioned some of the stuff that happened there then.
Well, I did. I, because it made an incredible impression on me. And obviously the biggest impression, and I've mentioned this to you before, we did an event together in outside Nottingham, was the way you came onto the field of play. And you told me in that event that was actually you needing to take control. Whereas we were all watching this going, we're just taking a wicket. But, oh no, this guy's going to come in, he's going to smash us everywhere. was that like a really deliberate, conscious thing on your part? Or was it just, I mean, how did it come about? You had like the most unique entrance onto a cricket field, I think, of anyone I can think of.
If I was supposed to do it today, I'd be fined, I guess.
Well, let's see. I mean, match referee Richie, we could ask him.
Yeah. You have to cross nowadays, I think, in the middle.
Yeah.
And if that's not done, because most times I would wait for the batsman who has just gotten out. He comes through that little gate or whatever it may be, and then I'll do my thing. And this is how I felt. Sometimes it's like maybe a boxer in a ring. And you have the guy who's waiting to beat the champ or to take the champion's crown. And he's there just waiting in the ring and the champ is not coming. It plays with your mind. It certainly plays with your mind. But sometimes you've got to have strong resolve in order for you to get through that. But we all know this game, it's all about what goes on up here, not necessarily what goes on with bat and ball. But if you get your mind right, you'll be able to accomplish all these things.
Now, you guys are here for all sorts of reasons, but one of them is to tell us a little bit about Antigua and with the T20 World Cup coming up. Firstly, before we get on to the great things about Antigua, but just first before we do that, there's some Antiguans rising in the ranks now. Alzari Joseph, Shamar Joseph.
Shamar is Guyanese.
He's Guyanese. Yeah. Now, but can you see in those guys with Alzari and Shamar a kind of a real chance for the West Indies to make a huge impact in this World Cup?
Of course. We all know that once you got that kind of pace, it makes a big difference. And Shamar Joseph, who just now come on the scene, Alzari's been around for a while. You know, so if you got two or three really quick bowlers in your lineup, it always causes concern for the batters. So I think that once they get their act together, both Josephs, they could cause some problems in this T20.
And T20 cricket in the West Indies, you've got really good pedigree of that, having won the title. Everyone remembers the name, Carlos Brathwaite. There's no reason, is there, looking at the West Indies lineup, that they shouldn't be similarly impactful with the bat?
I honestly believe that we do have the personnel to get it done. And I remember I saw who it was, the captain, Rahman Powell, in the PSL just recently in Pakistan, and I uttered those particular sentiments to him. I said, I hope you guys start believing now that this is an opportunity to give the West Indian fans an opportunity to see us win a particular cup on home soil. The personnel is certainly there.
Lastly, Antigua, I asked the same question of the other two nights. When I'm there, what's your number one recommendation for me?
Well, there's a lot to choose from. First of all, Antigua and Barbuda, a beautiful twin island state. You know, we are very friendly people, you know, very accommodating, very hospitable. We're only aggressive when we're competing, as you have seen before, you know, but we accommodate everyone. And in terms of cricket as well, there's no place in the world like Antigua to watch cricket. Hence, that's why a lot of English spectators always flock to Antigua, because we got everything to offer, right? So if you like seafood, we got lots of that. If you're a drinker, we got some good rum, you know? And the party atmosphere, the vibes. Antigua Barbuda is a whole package. So you want to come to chill out, relax, after work, maybe a vacation, Antigua Barbuda. We got everything to offer.
So, Viv, you got anything to add to that?
Certainly. I know one of our promos certainly would be the beaches. Certainly, that's the beginning. And everything else after, because you have climates like this. We came into this climate today, and it's not the sort of climate for a Caribbean, for a Caribbean person. Vice versa, we'd save some sunshine for you as well in the Caribbean.
If it's any consolation, it isn't the climate for me either. Thank you so much. You've been so generous with your time. I'm really looking forward to seeing you out there in Antigua. And again, thanks for being on Zero Ducks.
Pleasure. Good man.
So there you have it. It was tense. It was terrifying. Of course it was. It was four Antigua nights, and it was me. And I don't think I screwed it up. They were magnificent. Thank you so much. Thank you to them. Thank you to you. And thank you, most importantly, to the Antigua and Barbuda Tourist Board.
Sports Social Podcast Network.